That was good, right? As if anything could be good in this whole situation. Okay. Thanks for letting me know. I'm very sorry, Angel. I will call again when I have more information. I hung up. A few seconds later, my phone buzzed with a text from Alan. It's time. Alan helped me roll the gurney out to the van. Even using the ambulance door, I couldn't escape the grief and shock of the cops. It flowed out like a black wave, enveloping everything in the vicinity. I caught a glimpse of the sheriff holding the hand of a freckled, middle-aged woman wearing a grief-stricken expression. Connor's mother. Averting my eyes, I loaded up Connor's body, closed the doors, and headed for the morgue. The morgue. With Connor. Dead. My palms grew sweaty against the steering wheel. After a year and 8 months at the coroner's office, I'd picked up more bodies than I could count, and never been bothered even in the least. But this was different. This was Connor. Saberton had murdered him, but I was still responsible. I pulled into the empty parking lot of a strip mall, shut off the engine, and climbed into the back seat to sit on the wheel well beside the gurney. Hand shaking ever so slightly, I tugged the zipper down, then pushed the heavy plastic of the bag aside to show his face, the sunburn ashen now. At least his eyes had been closed. I couldn't do this if they were open. "I'm sorry, Connor," I whispered, clenching my hands together. "I'm so sorry. It's my fault. Those motherfuckers murdered you. You weren't dead yet. I know it." A sob welled up, and I let myself bawl, gasping out the truth about the zombie situation, of what I was, what I'd done. He deserved to know. Even like this. Even dead. Eventually, the torrent subsided. I fumbled a tissue out of one of the supply bins and blew my nose. Calmer now, I placed a hand on his shoulder. Cool. Not yet cold. "I'm going to do everything I can to make this right, Connor." I reverently zipped the body bag, then climbed into the driver's seat and continued on my way. Dr. Nikas called less than a minute later, perfect timing since I'd have been incoherent any earlier. "My testing of the samples is in progress, with no new revelations yet. Dr. LeBlanc will autopsy Deputy Connor in the morning, and Alan will run interference with any issues that might arise in the process." "What about after the autopsy?" I asked. "I mean, is Connor still, a biohazard?"
"Fortunately for all, Deputy Connor's mother has decided to have him cremated, which eliminates any risk."
I exhaled in relief. One tiny worry in a sea of worries taken care of.
"Alan told me that your shift is over once you transport Deputy Connor."
"It is. And don't worry, I'm heading straight for the lab as soon as I'm done."
"No," he said, quiet yet commanding. "You are to go home and get a good night's rest. Can you be at the lab for 10 a.m.?
I wanted to protest, assure him I could be there a lot earlier, but I knew I'd only receive another firm no. "Yeah, 10 works fine."
"We'll get through this, Angel. I'll see you tomorrow."
I mumbled a goodbye and hung up. At the morgue, I placed Connor's body in the cooler and logged him into the computer. Then I clocked out and cried all the way home. Chapter 15. In a turn of events that would surprise absolutely no one, I slept like total shit. By 6 a.m., I was awake and staring at my ceiling, which had far less character than the one in the old house. That ceiling had been cracked and stained, and if I was lucky, a roach would skitter across as entertainment. But this ceiling was new and white and smooth. A blank space that a piece of me envied. My alarm was set for 8,
but I stubbornly refused to turn it off, even though I knew damn well I wasn't going to fall back asleep. But shutting it off somehow felt like giving up. I stared at the ceiling and tried to go numb. When the alarm finally beeped, I forced myself out of bed and got my pathetic ass in gear. The route from my house to the lab was a series of scenic and mostly empty back highways. The part of me that wasn't sad, stressed, and exhausted could recognize it was going to be a pretty day and that the drive was even lovelier than usual. Patches of fog swirled around the edges of the road and wrapped around the trees. Sunlight pierced through the mist in beams so tangible, it seemed as if I could reach out and grab one. Azalea bushes were in full pink and fuchsia bloom, and the occasional dogwood offered a burst of white amidst the lush green of spring leaves. Gorgeous. And wasted on me. Okay, maybe not totally wasted. I'd have been a lot more miserable if the scenery was dreary, and my mood wasn't completely at rock bottom. I had enough mental energy to tell myself to pull it together. I was going to help Dr. Nikas find a solution, or at least find out what the hell was going on and how bad it might get. Because, yeah, I knew it could be a whole lot worse. My phone buzzed with a text from Reb, the coroner's office receptionist. I pulled over to read it. Miss Portia Antilles wants you to call her, no reason given. Delight and worry rushed through me in a confusing emotional cocktail. I had really enjoyed talking to Portia, but what if she was simply calling to give me a heads up because the homeowners association had seen us dump the frogs? Or to tell me that the frogs had mass suicided in the maw of the great blue heron? I got back on the road and dialed the number Reb had included, trying not to think of even more dire reasons Portia might want to speak to me. Hello? Hi, this is Angel Crawford.
Oh, thank you so much for returning my call so quickly.
She gave a warm chuckle.
The instant I left the message, I realized how odd this might be, but I knew that calling back and saying never mind would be even creepier. However, I enjoyed talking with you yesterday. And since I have to be in town this afternoon, I was wondering if you'd like to grab coffee together?
She said it all in what felt like a nervous rush, which, of course, made me like her all the more. I'd love that, I said, and thought I heard a relieved breath on the other end. I have class at 1 today, so would noon work?
That's perfect. Is Dear John's Cafe all right? It's not far from the campus.
I know it well, I said. That totally works.
Excellent. I'll see you then.
I hung up. Mood improved about 1,000,000,000%. As I made the turn onto the road that led to the lab, I caught movement out of the corner of my eye. A quick glance toward the passenger seat revealed nothing, though. Probably a trick of the light. The dabbled sunlight cast shifting patterns, making it easy to think there was something furry and rat-sized launched itself at my face. I reacted in the only possible way, shrieked, batted it frantically away, and slammed on the brakes. The instant the car stopped, I threw it into park, then bailed out and didn't stop running until I was a good 20 feet away. Only then did I turn and warily peer at the car. The driver's door stood open, but I didn't see any sign of a rat or a bat or whatever the hell had tried to attack me. Jesus, Angel. You've gone up against trained mercenaries and you're acting like a weenie about a rodent? Yeah, well, I'd yet to come across a mercenary who was weird and squirmy and jumped at my face out of nowhere.
I squared my shoulders and crept toward the open door. The thing jumped onto the passenger seat, and I backpedaled, fast, in case it decided to lunge for my throat, but it remained motionless.
I eased closer. Not a murderous rat bat at all, but a frog. Covered in hair and fuzz and dirt and God knows what else it had picked up from the floorboard of my car. Oh, you poor thing! I scooped it up, wincing at all the stuff that clung to its skin.
You escaped the bucket only to spend the whole night in my car? I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. I looked around for a ditch or some other froggy-friendly body of water, but it hadn't rained in a while, and the ditches were all dry. In no way could I let the frog go by the side of the road. Well, Mr. Fluffy, how about I take you someplace I can clean you up? I didn't have anything in my car I could put him in, so I set him gently on the passenger seat. Don't jump at my face again, okay? The frog simply stared at me, which I took as a solemn promise to not cause any trouble. A couple of minutes later, I pulled into the lab parking lot, scooped Mr. Fluffy up, and headed inside. Once we were both cleared through security, I took the frog to the nearest procedure room and washed him off in the sink, then left him there while I hunted through cabinets for a suitable froggy container. Pierce stepped in.
Angel, I need you to.
He startled as the frog let out a deep croak, made even more impressive by the resonance of the metal sink.
What the hell?
That's Mr. Fluffy, I explained. My biology prof is an ass and was going to have us kill our own frogs before we dissected them, so I rescued the frogs and set them all free. But this one must have escaped the bucket in my car, and I found him only a few minutes ago. He scoffed.
Mr. Fluffy, it's a frog.
I smiled sweetly. Yeah, well, it's kind of like how I sometimes think of you as Mr. Happy. A flicker of amusement passed over his face, but then he sobered and stepped close.
Have you ever knowingly passed information relative to the tribe or operations in this lab to Saberton or other potentially hostile outsiders?
An indignant reply sprang to my lips, but I held it back as his nostrils flared. He was scenting me. My outrage dissipated. Old zombies like Pierce and Dr. Nikus were walking lie detectors, better than any polygraph. Everyone was getting this treatment. It wasn't personal. No, I said. A pause, a sniff, and then,
are you aware of anyone else doing so?
No.
Where does your loyalty lie?
This one was a little annoying. If he expected me to pledge my allegiance to the tribe, he was going to be sorely disappointed. I folded my arms over my chest. To the preservation and protection of all zombies. A low snort escaped him before he stepped back. He didn't seem upset by my answer, though.
Once you've finished with your new pet, I need you in the North Conference Room. Meeting starts in 5 minutes.
Got it. Thanks, I said, and kept the bright smile on my face until he left the room.
Gaw.
The North Conference Room was where the Inner Circle held their super private, closed-door powwows. Even with all the stuff I'd done for the tribe, I'd never been invited to one of those meetings. Never really wanted to be either. Pierce asked me to come because I'm patient zero, I told myself. But logic didn't help my overactive imagination. What if they had more information about how Douglas Horton and Connor became shamblers? And what if that information drove them to prevent more shamblers by getting rid of the source? Me. Which would be totally stupid, since surely they'd want to keep me alive in order to use my unique parasite to find a cure. Besides, if they wanted to get rid of me, they'd hardly call me into their inner sanctum to do the deed. The carpet was really nice in there. One thing was for sure, though. If they had plastic drop cloths on the floor, I was totally out of there. I'd seen enough mobster movies to know what that meant. I transferred Mr. Fluffy into a suitable ventilated container, stuck a note on top that read, Property of Angel, then gathered my courage and proceeded to the meeting room. About half the size of the main conference room, this one had a good deal more elegant comfort. An enormous whiteboard took up most of one wood-paneled wall, and a screen dominated another. 8 leather executive chairs surrounded a burnished walnut table with a pad of paper and pen at each place. Best of all, there was no plastic to protect the luxurious cream carpet from bloodstains. Marcus occupied the seat at the head of the table, flanked by Dr. Nikus and Kyle. Brian sat near the other end, and across from him was a woman I didn't recognize, mid-30s or so, wearing a deep blue hijab. She had serious dark eyes, that flickered up to me before returning to the tablet before her. Marcus gave me a nod of greeting.
Angel, I don't believe you've met Shide Rajavi yet. She's our accountant and financial advisor.
And she was human, too, with a brain that smelled just right to my still teensy bit hungry parasite. How did a human get to be part of the inner circle of the local zombie mafia? I held my questions and did the polite smile and nice to meet you, which she did right back, and then I took the conspicuously empty seat between Brian and Kyle. Brian was Kyle's zombie daddy, but there was no love lost in that relationship. Several years ago, Kyle had been a Saberton operative in the final stages of aggressive lymphoma caused by an experimental combat stimulant. He had welcomed death for long-standing personal reasons and was ready for it. But Brian stole death away from him, turning him zombie against his will on Pietro's orders to recruit him. Pierce entered and closed the door firmly behind him, then sat at the opposite end from Marcus. Suddenly, that was clearly the head of the table.
Let's cut right to the chase,
Pierce said, placing both hands flat on the polished surface. He launched into a quick and dirty briefing about the Shambler and the morgue and how it related to me and Judd, the suspected gator involvement, the decision to go to the swamp in the hopes of retrieving the body and getting tissue samples from alligators, and finally our encounter with the Saberton thugs and all that we discovered. My presence was justified when the topic moved to Connor, and I was asked to relate what happened before, during, and after his collapse, up to and including the hospital and his death. Once I finished, I fielded questions, even from the accountant. Kyle gave his report next, with about 1,000% more detail than I had on the hospital events. He even rattled off Connor's heart rate and other vital signs at varying stages of the ordeal. Damn, the dude was a pro. At long last, the others seemed satisfied that they'd wrung every scrap of information from me and Kyle.
Angel killed Judd Seiler a little over 3 weeks ago, Pierce said. Then 2 days ago, this drowning victim, Douglas Horton, decides to go for a fucking walk in the morgue. And yesterday, Deputy Beckett Connor appeared to succumb to the same malady, and then died in the hospital under suspicious circumstances.
He frowned at Dr. Nikus.
What have you found out?
I'll begin with the alligator samples, Dr. Nikus said. All but one were normal. The tissue of the off-color gator was rife with a parasite mutation identical to the one found in Mr. Horton.
I shuddered. What happens if an infected gator bites another animal? Will the prey go shambly?
I wish I knew the answer, he replied, eyes haunted at the implications. I have some preliminary tests running, but resources are thin. My priority must be the development of a cure.
Get on with it, Pierce growled. The samples?
Amazingly, Dr. Nikus didn't flip him off as I would have done in his place.
The severed hand Rachel retrieved from the Saberton vessel carried the mutated parasite as well.
Marcus muttered something foul.
Saberton got away with the rest of the body, which means they're in possession of the mutated parasite now.
Dr. Nikus exhaled.
I'm afraid so.
I made a humphing noise. We'll be here all night if you keep calling this thing the mutated parasite. I vote we name it Eugene. 2 syllables instead of 6. Easy peasy. Pierce let out an annoyed grunt, but Dr. Nikus gave me a curious smile.
Why Eugene, Angel?
Because it messes with you genes. Brian groaned, and Kyle almost smiled. Dr. Nikus simply inclined his head.
Eugene it is, then.
What about Deputy Connor?
Pierce snapped.
My testing shows that Beckett Connor was infected with, Eugene.
I raised my hand. Connor is being autopsied today. Will there be a problem with lab tests and stuff? Will they find Eugene?
Based on the samples taken, I would say not, Dr. Nikus said. Eugene is cagey as the normal organism, and detection requires specialized equipment and the knowledge of precisely what to look for. At least our secret was safe, though it also meant we were on our own to find a cure.
Did you test the paxibiotic? I asked. Was it poisoned?
It was untainted. The lines in his face seemed to deepen. But he was, indeed, murdered.
By Saberton? Pierce said. Why?
I don't know for certain. But it is well within Saberton's methodology to kill for no reason, other than to give themselves an advantage.
My guess is they acquired the samples they needed, then killed Connor, so I would not have access to a live patient.
Pierce scowled.
Why do they care? What's their game?
Exploitation is ever their underlying motivator. I wish I knew more.
If it wasn't the antibiotic, what killed him? I asked.
The earwax sample contained an extremely high concentration of...
Dr. Nakis rattled off a long chemical name.
Which is the primary ingredient in Saberton's zombie tranquilizer. The compound had been encased in a wax with a melting point close to body temperature. This delayed the toxin's delivery long enough for the murderer to be clear of the scene, and coincidentally corresponded to the administration of the paxibiotic. I suspect what the nurse interpreted as taking an earwax sample was, in truth, the insertion of the trink capsule into the ear canal, where it would not likely be noted on an autopsy. Further testing revealed that, while the trink merely slows the healthy zombie parasite, this particular compound is fatal to Eugene and host.
Silence fell as we digested the ugly news. How did Saberton know about Connor? I finally asked. Alan said the morgue isn't bugged, but they were at the ER not 20 minutes after we called for the ambulance.
We swept the entire coroner's office building and vehicles thoroughly,
Brian put in.
I don't know of any surveillance devices that could avoid detection by our equipment.
Perhaps the phones are tapped, Shidae asked, voice a gravelly alto.
Calls to and from the lab are encrypted and secured, Pierce said. Angel's phone has been checked, and neither Ari nor I have sensed a mole among our people.
Marcus tugged a ham through his hair.
We're missing something.
Maybe we need to have a chat with Christy Charish, I said, lip curling on her name. Baldy must be working for her. Pierce pressed a button on the remote, and my cell phone picture of the health department doctor and Baldy appeared on the wall screen.
We haven't confirmed Dr. Garrison's ties to Saberton, or determined whether she was coerced into assisting them, but Angel was right about her assistant. He's Harlan Murtaugh, the Saberton operative from the boat incident. But, even with that connection, I'm not convinced Christy is pulling the strings. We monitor her every movement,
Brian said, and pulled up the message app on his phone.
This morning, Christy woke at 5:40 and went to the 6 a.m. yoga class in the studio at the end of her block. She returned home at 7:10, had a cup of coffee, showered, had another cup of coffee, and ate a boiled egg and half a grapefruit. At 7:45, she called for her car, and she arrived at her office at 7:58.
I slouched in my chair. Okay, I get it. She's probably not being a horrible psychopath in this situation.
Actually, that brings me to my next point.
Pierce leaned back in his chair and laced his fingers across his stomach.
Christy Charish is a brilliant scientist who has considerable research experience with our unique condition.
His mouth tightened into a smirk.
But as we know, she would love nothing more than to fuck over all zombies and see to it that we become her test subjects. It's only a matter of time before she takes radical action against us, especially if she finds a way to weaponize the mutated para- Eugene. Personally, I'd rather not wait for the axe to fall.
You want to take her out? Brian asked.
No. I want to turn her into a zombie. Make her work for us.
Kyle tensed beside me. I stared at Pierce in undisguised horror. Are you fucking kidding? His gaze snapped to me.
I'm not fucking kidding. She's a potential asset and an existing threat. We remove her from Saberton and then cut them off at the knees.
But turning her? No, I said with heat. That's wrong. I swung around to look at the others. Kyle sat with his hands clenched and expression dark. Brian was as unreadable as always, while Shide could have given him lessons in inscrutable. Marcus looked tense and unhappy, but then again, he looked like that a lot lately. Dr. Nikas sat with his head bowed so I couldn't see his face. Was he relieved that he might be able to work with Christy again? He'd certainly been frustrated by his lack of progress while working alone. I dragged my attention back to Pierce, the smug asshole. There's no guarantee that Christy would help us under duress. She's Christy fucking Charish. She's killed, kidnapped, mutilated, and tortured for her own twisted purposes. If you bring her into our midst, she'll find a way to take us down from the inside.
Your opinion is duly noted, Angel, Pierce said with a mocking incline of his head. Not that you have a vote in this matter. However, I do.
Dr. Nikas lifted his head, face pale and eyes haunted.
It is but one vote of those gathered here, but I cannot support such an abhorrent and deeply offensive plan.
Kyle stood, expression hard.
Another voice of dissent here.
His gaze bored into Pierce.
Not that my dissent mattered to you when you ordered me turned, but at least we had a common enemy in Saberton. I had a reason to work with you after I was saved.
He spat the word. Brian's mask of inscrutability slipped, and he looked away. Dr. Nikas cleared his throat as Kyle sank to his chair.
I know I have thus far failed to find the answers we need. But this is not the solution. If you force Dr. Charish into our service, I will not work with her.
Pierce snorted.
Come on, Ari. Do you expect us to build a second lab for her to use? No. There would be no need for a second lab.
Dr. Nikas stood.
What you propose is an abomination. If you move forward with your heinous proposal, I will leave this lab. And the tribe.
I sucked in a sharp breath. Leave the tribe? Dr. Nikas had been with Pierce for hundreds of years and had a crippling phobia of crowds. Shock washed over Pierce's face.
You can't possibly mean that. You're overreacting. You of all people know how much we need her on our side.
It is slavery, Dr. Nikas said, biting the words out. We trod too close to that line when she last worked with me. Your current proposition eradicates the line altogether.
He planted his fists on the table, eyes locked on Pierce.
You would deny her freedom and bind her to the tribe through need of brains, much like human traffickers hook their victims on narcotics in order to better force their compliance. Would Dr. Charish also be required to spread her legs for any man who desires her?
A horrible, intense silence fell. The outrage flowed from Dr. Nikas, thick and palpable.
You're absolutely right, Pierce said, jaw set. But what if she agreed to be turned?
Without any coercion.
He held Pierce's gaze, and it felt as if communication beyond my perception crackled between them. Ancient zombie mojo.
You cannot be serious.
After a long moment, Pierce looked away.
I was. But I was wrong. I withdraw the proposal.
The tension vanished from the room, probably blown away by the many relieved sighs. Dr. Nikas sat, hands trembling ever so slightly.
Thank you.
Pierce spread his hands.
I'm fortunate to have such wise counsel.
I rolled my eyes. Hadn't I flat out said it was a stupid idea? But at least Pierce had no real choice but to listen to Dr. Nikas. I couldn't imagine the tribe, or Pierce, without the doctor. Hell, if he left, I'd be right there with him. What if we found someone else? I asked. Someone willing, I mean. Christy is an amazing neurobiologist and researcher, but surely she's not the only person who knows that crap. And yeah, there's still the whole zombies are secret thing, but what if we found someone who wanted to be turned? You know, maybe there's a scientist out there who has cancer or ALS or something equally awful who'd be willing to come work for the tribe in return for getting their life saved by being turned into a zombie. Dr. Nikas gave me a look of such appreciation and regard that I damn near started crying right then and there.
I believe such an avenue would be worth exploring, at the very least.
Heads around the table nodded, paired with murmurs of assent. Even Pierce looked relieved that I'd shifted the subject away from his fucked-up human trafficking proposal. Shade tapped the screen of her tablet.
I can put out discreet inquiries. Very well,
Pierce said.
Does anyone have anything else they wish to discuss? No? Then I believe we are adjourned.
He pushed his chair back, inclined his head to everyone, then swept out of the room. The others followed him out, but I caught Marcus's arm as he started toward the door. Are you okay? I asked quietly. His brow furrowed.
What do you mean?
I waited for the last person to leave and closed the door. We might not be dating anymore, but I know you pretty damn well. You're miserable. Marcus offered me an unconvincing smile.
I'm not miserable, I'm just...
The smile dropped away and he sighed.
Disappointed, I guess. I spent so many years wanting so fucking badly to be part of the tribe, while wondering what the hell I'd done wrong to make Uncle Pietro exclude me.
Hurt shimmered across his face.
And now, not only am I in the tribe, I fucking lead it. Except I don't. You saw that meeting. I sure as hell didn't run it. I have minimal say in anything that matters, and it has nothing to do with my skills or what I can offer.
Bitterness sliced through his words.
I'm a goddamn puppet. It's worse than being kept out of the tribe. At least back then I had a life of my own.
He scrubbed a hand over his face.
And there's not a goddamn thing I can do about it. I can't even quit. It would affect everyone. Oh, shit, Angel, no, don't cry.
My lower lip quivered as the tears poured down my cheeks. It's all my fault you're head of the tribe, I wailed. Which means it's all my fault you're miserable.
What on earth are you talking about?
He pulled me into a hug.
None of this is your fault.
It is. It is. I sniffled against his chest. When we were in New York, after we rescued you and Kyle, I told Pierce how much you hated being excluded. He said he'd made a promise to the original Pietro Ivanov to keep his family away from all the zombie dealings and drama and danger and stuff. But then I pointed out that he'd turned you to save your life. And it was really stupid to cling to that promise now, especially since it hurt you to be shut out. And he said I was right. And then, all of a sudden, he said you should become tribe head in his place. He tightened his arms around me.
It's still not your fault, you goose.
Pietro Pierce laid everything out for me before I agreed to it.
I knew I was going to be a figurehead.
A sigh escaped him.
I just didn't expect to be so powerless, useless. I suppose I had this idea of him grooming me to take over for him someday, teaching me how to lead the tribe or something along those lines.
I tipped my head back to look at his face. But that's the sort of thing mortals do, I said. Pierce was born over 1,000 years ago. He's basically immortal. Why should he ever worry about training a replacement? A corner of his mouth tugged up.
And I've been thinking like a mortal.
He took a deep breath, then reluctantly released me.
Thanks, Angel. I think I needed to vent.
I cocked my head. You don't look as unhappy. He didn't look happy either, but it seemed as if a bit of the weight had lifted.
Well, other than the traumatic brain injury, I'm basically immortal too, right?
Marcus crooked a smile.
So, for the sake of the tribe, I can put up with a few years of being a puppet.
It still sounded sucky to me, but I didn't want to shatter his newfound morale. You're tough and smart, I said instead. You'll come out on top and be happy and fulfilled. I'm sure of it. But immortal-ish or not, no way was I going to sit back and watch Marcus waste years of his life feeling useless. Chapter 16. My thoughts broke off as Raoul stuck his head in.
Marcus, there's a problem.
His eyes flicked my way, then back to Marcus.
There are more cases, and it's on the news.
Oh, fuck, I breathed. Marcus echoed my curse. Raoul nodded grimly.
I have it paused on the TV in the media room.
He departed at a jog, and we followed on his heels. Pierce arrived the same way we did.
Dr. Nikas and Brian are on their way, he said.
On the TV, a dark-haired news anchor was paused with her mouth open and eyes in mid-blink. Less than a minute later, the other two stepped into the room, with Marla pacing beside Dr. Nikas. Marcus picked up the remote and unpaused the TV.
Nen Masters, with a new development on the health front.
The scene cut to a clean-cut, sharp-eyed reporter standing in front of Tucker Point Regional Hospital. Brennan Masters. I'd met him about a month ago near a murder scene. I'd lent him a towel to wipe off mud, and he'd left me a note inviting me to coffee. Nice guy.
The medical community is grappling with a new and deadly health threat looming over St. Edward's Parish. Earlier today, one person died from a currently unidentified form of encephalitis, and five more patients have been admitted with symptoms of non-standard encephalitis marked by blind aggression.
The report cut to a gray-haired, white-coated woman inside the hospital. The crawl at the bottom of the screen read, Dr. Maureen Bauer, epidemiologist.
What we know is that the diseased and the five new patients contracted a form of meningoencephalitis. We're working in close coordination with other epidemiologists and the CDC to determine the cause.
Masters smoothly queried,
Do you know yet how this disease was transmitted?
We have reason to believe this form is transmitted via bites.
Mosquito.
Mosquitoes can't be ruled out yet, but we suspect human-to-human bite transmission is currently the primary means. The infected patients are aggressive, and there's strong evidence that human bite wounds are the source of infection in at least three cases.
The scene returned to Masters outside the hospital.
If you come across anyone exhibiting symptoms, including extreme pallor accompanied by sweating, convulsions, or radically heightened aggression, call 911 immediately. Please do not engage with any possible victims.
The news anchor thanked Masters for his report. And now, Dana, with the weather. She froze with her tongue between her teeth. Marcus lowered the remote. I'll call Alan. I left the room and hid his number with shaking hands.
I was just about to get in touch with you, he said. You saw the news?
Yeah, I swallowed. Connor, and five more patients.
The report left out some details. Patient one is the nurse we saw in Connor's room, Patricia.
Oh no, he managed to bite her.
Maybe just grazed her, or maybe the shambler pathogen is transferred by other means as well. We don't know.
Shit. What about the others?
Patients two and three are brothers. They're not sure how the 21-year-old contracted it, but he works in the hospital cafeteria. The parents were on the way to the ER with him last night when he bit the 17-year-old. Less than an hour later, little brother became aggressive and both parents were bitten and infected. He paused. It's bad, Angel.
I know, I choked out. It's awful. He sighed.
Let Dr. Nikas know. He can call me 24/7 if need be.
I will. Thanks. He hung up. I returned to the media room and related what Alan had told me. Pierce, have you ever seen anything like this before? I asked desperately.
No, but that doesn't mean much. Before the 20th century and rapid communication, I had little knowledge of events beyond my local area.
Dr. Nikas pinched the bridge of his nose as if he had a headache.
I will speak to Alan, he said, then left with Marla.
Pierce did a come-with head nod to Marcus, and they departed, leaving me alone with the news anchor and her weirdly bared teeth. I sank to the couch, stomach a tight knot of acid. I wanted to be numb, too shocked and upset to feel anything. But I didn't deserve that luxury. Not when I was the one responsible for this catastrophe. There was absolutely no denying this was all my fault. Horton and Connor, dead. And now 5 more people were infected. Connor had been murdered, but what if the disease itself was fatal? If I hadn't abused the V12, I wouldn't have damaged my parasite, and I couldn't have infected Judd, which meant the alligators that ate his remains wouldn't be all zombified. And sure, even as normal gators, they might have chowed down on the hunters, but Douglas Horton wouldn't have turned into an undead monster, and Connor would still be alive. I forced myself up off the couch. Enough wallowing in misery. Sure, I'd fucked up big time with the V12, but who the hell could have anticipated it would result in contagious zombie gators? All I could do now was look for ways to put out the dumpster fire I'd started. Dr. Nikas was hard at work on the issue, and he knew more about zombies than any other zombie alive. Or maybe there was someone who knew zombies even better. Maybe a certain someone who was a couple thousand years old. I made my way to the medical wing and Kang's room. The door was closed, so I quickly punched the code, then slipped in and shut it behind me. Kang lay gauze-wrapped in the bed exactly as I'd seen him the other day. Squiggly lines continued to crawl across the monitor screen, but his eyes remained stubbornly closed. I sat on the chair, propped my elbows on the bed, and planted my chin in my hands. Kang, it's Angel. Again. I really need you to wake up. Please? There's some bad shit going on, and I'm hoping you might know a way to fix it or help us out with your ancient zombie mojo smarts. People are shambling. I don't know what else to call it. And it's all my fault. I got addicted to the V12 mod, and it really fucked up my parasite, and then I went and bit a guy named Judd who was trying to kill me, but then he got wasted by another dude, and so I ate Judd's brain, but I didn't eat all of his brain because I was in a hurry and had to escape into the swamp, but later that night, Judd fucking came into the swamp and found me, even though most of his brain was gone. And he was all Night of the Living Dead and shit. But I killed him again for good, so I thought everything was okay. But a couple of days ago, a hunter got in a boat accident and drowned and then got bit by an alligator, or got bit by a gator then drowned. Either way, he woke up in the morgue and came after me, all rrr. So we figured some gators must have eaten Judd and got infected. And then yesterday, a really decent cop who'd been grazed by alligator teeth collapsed and started going all shambly, but then some Saberton fuck killed him. He didn't deserve to die. And now we have zombie gators out there, and Dr. Nikas is trying to find answers, but we don't know jack shit about curing a shambler, and we're so screwed. I massaged my temples. Kang remained frustratingly unconscious.
I couldn't even annoy him awake with my unchecked blather. "Wake up," I snapped. "Wake the fuck up. I need you." I pressed my middle knuckle in the center of his sternum and twisted. Nothing. "God damn it, Kang. I know you can hear me." "Please." I gulped back a sob. "What the hell do I have to do? Bribery? Barter? Blackmail? How's this? If you don't wake up, I'll post pictures of you looking like a mummy all over the internet." Was his steady breathing a teensy bit faster? I yanked my gaze to the monitor. The pulse had climbed 2 whole beats per minute. Didn't seem like a lot, except for the fact that it had been steady at 52 since he came out of the tank. I clenched my hands together as adrenaline set them shaking. "That's right," I said. "If you don't wake up, I'll upload a pic of you to one of those Photoshop battle sites. Next thing you know, there'll be pictures of Mummy Kang getting ass-fucked by Bin Laden." Kang's chest shifted as he drew a deeper breath. I froze, certain that if I so much as twitched, I'd scare him back to the safety of his coma.
"Would break internet,"
he whispered, eyes open a crack. I leaped to my feet and punched the air several times. "Is it too bright in here?" At his infinitesimal nod, I rushed to the wall and dimmed the lights to about quarter strength. "Better?"
"Much,"
Kang rasped, opening his eyes more. He cleared his throat, wincing a bit.
"Angel, I saw you in the tank? A dream?"
"Nope. It was me," I said. "I had a little problem and had to be regrown, so I know a bit of what you were going through."
"A problem such as mine?"
"No, not the serial killer. I had trouble with one of Dr. Nakus's parasite supplements." Questions swam through his eyes, but he merely gave a nod.
"Has the killer been stopped?"
"Yeah, it was Ed Quinn, the paramedic. But he's in Costa Rica now, since it kind of wasn't his fault. He was coerced and brainwashed by Christy Charish to kill zombies. It's a long story. But Christy had your head frozen, then Pietro got it back, and Dr. Nikas here did the work of regrowing you."
"How long has it been?"
"Ed attacked you about 1.5 years ago. He wheezed something in a language I didn't recognize.
"So much time lost due to my own hubris. I should have listened when you warned me of the threat."
"Yeah, well, I can be smart sometimes."
"I have little doubt."
A faint smile flickered across his mouth, then faded as if it was too much effort to maintain it.
"You look well."
"I am. Now, at least." I winced. "You've missed a lot."
"You'll catch me up."
He broke off, eyes flicked to the door. A half second later, the sound of running footsteps reached my ears. Crap. I darted to the door, punched in the code, yanking it open just as a red-faced Pierce reached it. "Kang's awake," I announced with a cheery smile. "I was about to come tell you." The red darkened a shade.
"You should have notified me immediately,"
he snarled and pushed past me. He stopped at the foot of the bed, crossed his arms, and gave Kang a fierce smile.
"And now we can finish our conversation."
Kang gave a slow blink.
"Who the fuck are you?"
I stifled a giggle. "Oh yeah, that's another thing you missed. This is Pietro. Though now he's known as Pierce Gentry." Pierce shot me a furious look. Kang began to make an odd gasping sound. Alarm shot through me until I realized he was laughing.
"I wonder how long you would tolerate that aged form, forced to watch others fight your battles, itching to wade into the thick of the action." "The Pietro identity was a necessary sacrifice for the good of my people,"
Pierce said through his teeth. Though he kept his arms folded over his chest, the muscles stood out like cords.
"I didn't abandon it for selfish reasons." "Of course not. You are an ever-suffering saint."
Pierce bristled.
There are only a select few who know Pierce Gentry is the same person as Pietro Ivanov. It's best if we keep it that way.
He stabbed a dark glare at me. I was immune to them by this point.
Geez, I know. But this is Kang. Like, your zombie daddy wouldn't know you?
I glared right back at him. And surely Kang would need to know your Pietro Pierce mashup if y'all were going to finish some super special conversation.
Before Pierce could squash me like a bug, Dr. Nikas stepped in, breathless.
I gave him a triumphant grin.
Dr. Nikas, look who's finally awake.
I gestured brightly to Kang, then let out a sour, Kang's eyes were closed, and the activity on the monitor was back to his pre-waking levels.
Well, he was awake.
Pierce rounded on Dr. Nikas, face suffused with rage and hands tightening into fists.
Wake him up, Ari, now. I will not,
Dr. Nikas replied, voice as calm as a crisis counselor on Valium. I started forward to defend him, shocked by Pierce's sudden fury, but he gave me a micro headshake.
I've waited long enough already, Pierce growled. Wake him up.
Dr. Nikas remained icy cool in the face of Pietro's heat.
No.
For an instant, I was certain Pierce would strike Dr. Nikas, but then he spun away with a guttural cry and slammed his fist into the wall, penetrating the heavy plywood. Teeth bared, he yanked his bloody hand free and stormed out. Silence descended. I gulped and tore my eyes from the hole in the wall.
What the hell was that about?
Dr. Nikas let out a small sigh.
It's all right. The rage will pass soon enough.
Frowning, I peered at him. You've seen him like this before. He let out a longer sigh.
Too many times. It's rare to see him thus lately. But the unchecked anger still occasionally surfaces when he grows deeply frustrated.
He turned away and busied himself, checking Kang's vitals, giving me the distinct impression he didn't want to talk about it anymore. I held my burning questions and instead replayed the incident in my head. Pierce's blow-up had been startling, but Kang's behavior had been odd, too. He'd been awake and coherent and talking, and then not. Dr. Nikas gave me a slight nod, then quit the room, closing the door behind him. I returned to the chair and took Kang's hand. It remained limp and cool, but he wasn't fooling me. He was faking being asleep. I was positive. There were plenty of reasons he might do so, and one stood out neon bright. He didn't want to answer Pierce's questions.
Yet eventually, Pierce would find a way to wring the answers from him.
I didn't know whether Pierce or Kang was in the right, but it felt wrong to force Kang to reveal a secret he'd prefer to keep.
Pierce has been itching for you to wake up ever since he got your head back from Christie's lab, I murmured,
shifting my grip so we were palm to palm, with my hand beneath his.
I sure hope you'll tell me what the big deal is.
Soon. My pulse quickened as I used my middle finger to trace four numbers in his palm. I was trusting my gut, even though it had steered me wrong a time or three. Sure, it's okay to get back together with Randy for the fifth time. Or, I'll try OxyContin just this once. I can't get addicted on only one pill. Or more recently, dosing myself with V12 is a good idea and worth the risk. But this felt different, I hoped. After a brief pause, I traced the numbers again. If he was awake, he'd understand what I was doing. If he wasn't awake, then I was worrying over nothing and no harm, no foul. All right, dude. I have a coffee date with someone a whole lot livelier than you. I withdrew my hand and stood. Catch you on the flip side. I punched my 4-digit code into the keypad by the door and left. Chapter 17.
Though Tucker Point had a number of coffee shops and cafes, Dear John's was my hands-down favorite. Not only did it have excellent coffee and pastries baked fresh on the premises, but it was also in convenient walking distance from the morgue. Not to mention, the place had a cool origin story. A decade ago, John Hickey had received a literal Dear John letter from his then-wife after she left him for his brother's ex-wife. Hickey decided it was time for a change, quit his job, and invested everything in the cafe. Last month, he'd opened another cafe in Longville, and rumor had it he was looking at commercial property in Baton Rouge for a third location. Meanwhile, I was happy to support his ambition by indulging in his super yummy hot chocolate at every opportunity. There was no sign of Portia when I arrived, but that was forgivable since I was early. The cafe was at the end of its lunch rush, and after ordering my hot chocolate, extra whipped cream, I snagged a table by the window that also allowed a view of the door. I had Mr. Fluffy's container with me, though I'd stuffed it into a paper grocery bag since I suspected the cafe workers would be less than thrilled at the frog's presence. I warned him quite firmly not to make any croaks, then placed the bag under the table and savored my super excellent hot chocolate. Portia arrived a couple of minutes later, managing to look elegant in jeans and a simple pale green shirt. She scanned the room, face breaking into a smile when she spied me. After making her purchase, she settled into the chair across from me with a cup of herbal tea.
I hope I haven't kept you waiting long.
Not at all. And I have a bit of a surprise for you. I motioned for her to look under the table, then unrolled the top of the bag. Rana Pippians, right? Portia chuckled.
Excellent memory. Did you pilfer more?
No, this one escaped the bucket. I found him hiding out in my car, and I was hoping you might take him to join the others.
It would be my pleasure, she replied with zero hesitation and set the bag by her purse.
I'm really glad you called, I said. The past 24 hours have been kind of shitty. I hesitated. Don't know if you heard about the deputy who died yesterday? Her brow furrowed with concern.
I saw it on the news. Was he a friend of yours?
Not close or anything, but we'd worked a bunch of scenes together. Kind of half-assed flirted with each other, but nothing serious. I curled my hands around my mug, wishing I could draw all of its warmth into me. But I was with him when he collapsed, and in the ER with him when he died.
Oh, Angel, I'm so sorry.
Tears stung my eyes. I grabbed a napkin to blot them away. Sorry.
Don't be, she said, warm and firm. You're more than justified, and it's far healthier to express your grief.
It's just bullshit, you know? He was a really nice guy. I crumbled the napkin in my fist. I've seen a lot of death. So much of it is stupid and pointless, but this, he didn't deserve it. My throat clogged, and I covered by turning away to blow my nose. I wanted so badly to share my sense of guilt over Connor's death. I couldn't help but feel she'd understand. But opening up would reveal too much.
No, he didn't deserve it, Portia said, emotion rippling through her voice. And the fact that it was sudden and unexpected makes it all so much harder.
I met her eyes. You've lost someone suddenly?
My husband, she said, and gave me a soft smile. Last October. Massive heart attack. And then a few weeks later, my friend and neighbor lost her fiancé in a plane crash. Ah, shit.
Portia chuckled.
I used that word and many others, as did Jane. The two of us went through a truly profane amount of ice cream together in the following month.
Something clicked into place in my brain. Jane? You mean Jane Pennington? How many other Janes could there possibly be who live near Portia and whose fiancé had died in a plane crash? Or in her case, pretended to die in a plane crash?
Yes, the congresswoman.
I know her, I said. Actually, I met her through Pietro, her fiancé. I dated his nephew for a while.
Her face brightened. What a small world. I liked Pietro quite a bit.
Yeah, he was cool.
Then, since I felt like I needed to add something nicer, I said, he helped me out a bit with tuition. Technically, the tuition had been covered by the bonus the tribe had paid me for helping rescue zombies from Saberton's New York lab, but helped me out a bit was a touch more discreet.
And now you're an expert frog rescuer.
Go with your strengths, right? I grinned and took a sip of hot chocolate. You told me you didn't start college until you were 25. Why so late?
I got pregnant when I was 16, she said with a wry twist of her mouth. My parents sent me to live with my grandmother in Atlanta, and I was kept out of school to avoid embarrassing the family.
She shook her head.
I was angry at my parents for sending me away, and furious when they told me I had to put the baby up for adoption or be cut off completely.
Wow, they sound like assholes. She grimaced.
It was a different time, and they did what they thought was best for everyone. I didn't have a choice, but after I gave up my baby, I refused to return home. I lived with my grandmother and finished high school in Atlanta.
Her nose wrinkled.
I was 19 by the time I graduated, thanks to missing a year of school. Then I was too proud to ask my parents for college money.
Portia rolled her eyes at her foolish younger self.
So, I stayed with Grandma and found a job that helped pay the bills.
What happened at age 25? Her expression softened.
I met Corbin Antilles, a lawyer, 8 years older than me, and already on the fast track to partner in the firm where he worked. We were married barely 6 months later, and I was in college the following semester with his unwavering support.
That's a seriously cool story, I said fervently. Do you know anything about the baby you gave up?
I do, she said, smiling. About a decade ago, he went looking for his birth mother and found me. He's an engineer, had a great childhood.
She turned her hands over and examined them.
Part of me wished I could have watched him grow up, but letting him go was the right choice.
You and your husband never had kids?
We tried for years with no luck.
Portia chuckled.
According to the doctors, my husband had slow and scarce swimmers. We discussed alternatives, but finally decided having children simply wasn't a priority for us.
I can't have children, I realized. And it felt like a blow. I'd never really thought about it before, but no way could a zombie carry a baby to term. And now that it was off the table, it had a lot more emotional weight. Portia must have sensed my downward spiraling mood because she steered the conversation to lighter topics, such as the new movie theater and the never-ending construction on 7th Street. By the time we got to the latest scandal involving the chief of police, I'd shaken off the brief funk and giggled with her about the goat and the alien sex doll found in his office. All too soon, Portia glanced at her watch and sighed.
I have to go, and so do you.
English class. Bah.
I really enjoyed this. We need to do it again. She glanced away, and for a god-awful second I was sure I'd misjudged everything, and she was going to make an excuse about how busy she'd be for the next year, painting her toenails and reorganizing her sock drawer and washing her hair. But when she looked back, there was only a gentle, faraway sadness in her eyes. She reached across the table and squeezed my hand.
I hope we can, she said,
her voice ever so slightly rough.
I'd like that.
Before I could say another word, she gathered up her purse and Mr. Fluffy and hurried out. It felt like fog had rolled in and masked her sunshine, and I wanted to chase her down to give her a hug and tell her everything was going to be all right. But I didn't. She'd think I was crazy. And besides, my gut was probably wrong. I dropped a dollar in the tip jar and headed out. Portia waved as she pulled out of her parking space. I smiled and waved back and kicked myself. Damn it.
I did trust my gut. I didn't know why, but that lady needed a hug.
Too late now.
Unlike Dingle, the English professor was a nice guy. Young, sort of cute in a nerdy way, but very unforgiving when it came to spelling errors or comma splices. I was starting to get the hang of punctuation, but spelling was my nemesis, thanks to my dyslexia. Fortunately, the universe gave me a break, and Mr. Worthing didn't assign one of his dreaded in-class writing projects. I had too much on my mind to focus, plus I never earned better than a C- on those stupid things because there was never enough time for me to make it coherent. Instead, we launched into a class discussion about how to write a clear thesis statement and come up with logical support for assertions. I threw myself into the conversation, since not only would it pump up my class participation grade, but it also served to distract me from the impending Shambler epidemic. Yet, as we talked about the oh-so-important freshman-level essays, something clicked for me. The principles could easily carry over to my sciency work at the Morgan Lab in the form of clearer and more concise reports of observations. For the first time, I saw English comp as something besides a total pain in my ass. Before I knew it, class was over, and everyone was gathering up their stuff to leave. As I headed for my car, I dug my phone out of my purse and turned it on. The only thing Mr. Worthing wasn't nice about was cell phones. They had to be off and stowed away. If he caught sight of a phone during class, the offending student would be marked absent and get zeros on any in-class assignments. I had no messages from the lab, which I hoped meant no new Shamblers, but there were back-to-back missed calls from an unknown number, followed by a voicemail from Reb at the coroner's office.
Hey, sweetie. A lady called for you, said it's urgent. The name is Dr. Charish, and her number is...
I didn't hear the rest due to the blood roaring in my ears.
Christy fucking Charish?
Of course, then I had to replay the whole thing since I'd zoned out. Reb gave the number and finished with,
she was real nice and polite, but sure seemed to want to call back ASAP, hun. I'll text the number over too so you have it right there.
My hands went icy. A lump of undisguised fear settled in my gut. I found Dr. Nikas's number in my favorites, but paused with my thumb hovering above the screen. ASAP. Christy had left the message with Reb nearly an hour ago, and no way would a call about this to Dr. Nikas be short and sweet. What if Christy already had some horrific plan in motion? Or what if she had my dad, or someone else close to me in her crosshairs? She'd ordered my dad kidnapped once before. Nothing was off the table where she was concerned. I punched in Christy's number before I could dither any longer. Time was ticking away, and I'd have more info for the tribe if I knew what her game was. I forced myself to breathe deeply and evenly. The last thing I wanted was for Christy to know I was rattled. On the fourth ring, she picked up.
Hello, Angel, she purred. What took you so long?
I was in class. I throttled back the snarl that hovered behind the words. What do you want?
Class?
Amusement colored her voice.
Sounds fascinating. Are you learning to cook? Knit? Or are you finally making a go at finishing high school?
It's college, I spat, instantly annoyed at myself for letting her goad me.
That's absolutely adorable. Kudos to you for pulling off the con. It doesn't say much for the college's standards, of course, but it fools people into thinking you're just a teensy bit smarter than you really are.
Ugh. Nope. Not gonna rise to that bait. What the fuck do you want that's so goddamn urgent? And I swear, if you fucked with my dad or any of my friends, I'll rip you apart with my bare hands.
She made a tisking noise. I'm utterly wounded that you would think that. No, darling. I'm calling to offer my help.
Help? My brain fumbled for purchase. With what?
With that tragic little homage to the Walking Dead you have going on down there, you lot have a serious problem on your hands.
That was the understatement of the year. Why would you help us?
You truly are thick. Your zombie epidemic needs to be stopped before it gets completely out of control. I'm offering my help because, A, I'm the best goddamn neurobiologist in North America, and the only one with knowledge of the zombie parasite. Those CDC morons will spend years simply trying to determine what the hell they have. And B, I have no desire to become one of the shambling horde, so it behooves me to do my part to put a quick end to it.
She gave a low chuckle.
Besides, Ari and I have worked together before. With our combined intellectual resources, we'll make short work of this disaster.
Shit. Her reasons were more than plausible. I can't answer for Dr. Nakis or the tribe. Why didn't you call them directly? Christy let out an impatient huff.
I don't have the lab's number. I do have yours. And now, you're wasting precious time. Contact Ari and pass along my offer. I can be reached at this number.
She disconnected. I made several obscene gestures at the phone, then called Dr. Nakis.
Angel, what is it?
He sounded harried and stressed, but that was normal lately. Christy Charish. I quickly told him about the conversation and her offer. When I finished, he heaved a sigh.
While I am understandably wary of her proposal, I confess to a generous amount of relief, though I doubt Pierce will view it in a favorable light, especially right now.
I frowned.